will increase your efficiency 20% if you learn to do the tough things first, the ones you don't want to do.
Ray Zinn now imparts his management philosophy in Tough Things First. In this series, Zinn covers it all, from the essence of human happiness.
If you're going to make it a consistent practice of working Saturdays just because you think you've got to work 80 hours a week to be successful, you're just flat out wrong.
To the downside of venture capital.
People said, well, don't sweat the small things. Well, I guarantee if you don't sweat the small things, the big things are going to become a mess.
And the essence of entrepreneurial discipline.
Don't want to wait until you jump off the cliff to grab a parachute.
Now here's Ray Zinn, Silicon Valley's longest serving CEO and today's guest host. Rob Artigo here once again, your guest host for this edition of the Tough Things First podcast. I'm a writer and investigator in California. Being invited back, always a pleasure, Ray.
Well, thanks, Rob. It's always good to have you on the program with me, and because you always have these interesting subjects and topics you want to discuss.
Thanks, Ray. So I went to Best Buy and Fry's Electronics in just one day during the pandemic to find a radio. And what I found was a lot of empty shelf space. And it was actually kind of disconcerting and bothered me because the products that I wanted were not there, first of all, but a lot of products that were normally there aren't there. And I suspected it couldn't only be a matter of people over shopping right now, but it was also something that went to the interruption of the supply chain. So even before the pandemic, the president was suggesting the U.S. would pay companies in the supply chain to bring the supply chain back to the continental U.S. So I'm wondering, in your mind, is this a feasible and noble idea for the U.S. to want to bring the supply chain back to our continent?
Well, it's kind of like the stimulus package that $2 trillion or whatever, I can't remember the exact number, but this is a couple of trillion dollars worth of stimulus. And so it's not unusual for a country, whether it be the U.S. or any other country, to offer a stimulus to help out in a particular situation. The current stimulus, of course, was to help families through this shutdown and through the economic recession that we had introduced by the coronavirus. So how does stuff get outsourced? In other words, let's talk about how does products and technology get outsourced to begin with. It's very simple. Countries like Ireland and China and Korea and Taiwan, Singapore, India, they all offer stimulus, and they'll say an incentives. They'll say, okay, if you'll bring your company or part of your company to our country, we'll buy you a building. You'll pay no taxes. And that's one of the problems that we've had, by the way, is that we've not taxed companies, U.S. companies that have gone outsourcing outside. We've not apparently thought that was a bad deal. But like anything else, the pendulum swings too far. And as a consequence, then our country suffers, employment suffers, because now we're outsourcing these jobs and this technology. You can get too much of a good thing, as you would. And it's not easy to bring those companies back, because the other countries have offered them, free buildings, pay 75% of an employee's salary. They'll provide all the benefits, especially in countries where you got socialism. The country pays those medical benefits, where in our country, of course, you have to pay for those. So they find ways to invite other countries to come to their country to stimulate their economy. And so the U.S. is no different. We've kind of outsourced ourselves to death, as you would, and so now we're facing the problem that those countries faced. Only we let the pendulum swing too far, and now it's going to be kind of costly for us to bring those companies back. And so to do that, we have to offer something that is of interest to them. We could increase the barriers to entry. In other words, we could increase the tariffs. You know, like why your shelves are empty is because of the high tariffs, and so the countries just can't afford to pay those tariffs, and so they just slow down the supply chain into our country, kind of punishing us in a way because we won't be able to buy those cheap products because our government has increased the tariff on them. And it makes them more expensive, 15, 20, 25%, whatever it is. And so they do the same thing. In France, for example, they have the foreign car import custom station way deep inside France. It takes, an hour or two to get to the import station. And then there's this long, they have this queue. They only have a couple of people there. And it's a long queue to get into your documents in to get them approved so that you can land your cargo. And so that's another way countries do it is they stop the imports coming in by making it difficult, whether it be tariffs or like in the case of France, where they just prevent, make it difficult for you. Your ship is sitting out in the harbor at a very high expense. You can't land your cargo because you can't get your cargo, your shipping documents approved to land your goods. And so, there's all kinds of tactics that these countries use to stimulate their economy and harm your economy. Now what the U.S. has found, of course, is that it's kind of a boomerang. They're trying to get the companies to come back, and the only way they'll get them to do that is they're going to have to incentivize them in some fashion to compensate for the fact that the countries that they're currently sourcing with have all these benefits that they're going to lose.
I was going to ask you about, will it take more than money to bring companies back to CONUS? You answered that question pretty clearly, is that when you have countries that can offer that, hey, look, we're paying our citizens their benefits already, so that's an expense that you don't have to incur. Are there options here that, I think you alluded to one, but are there other options here that we might be able to do that would make it advantageous for the company to move, even though maybe on the back end, for example, the benefits in China, which is a communist country and provides for its social safety net, if you will, come back to the United States, and that company that was manufacturing in China says, look, it's worth it to us to manufacture here, even if it's slightly more expensive.
Well, that's what the import export duties are. That's exactly what they do. They're there to protect your country. And so there's not very many ways that we can, migrate this puzzle. They only got so many strings you can pull. So the government, like in France, and they can say, okay, we'll make it difficult for somebody to land their cargo here if we don't want that cargo to be here. In other words, if we'd rather them buy French products, and then we'll make it difficult for countries to ship their product, import their products. When I was years and years, this is many, many years ago, when I was in Germany with my mother, I was taking her around visiting her relatives. She kept asking me, I don't see many American products here. And she says, why is that? And I says, because Germany just prevents it. They stop imports by all these regulations. Mm-hmm. And it makes it very expensive for their citizens to buy U.S. products because the duties are high, maintenance is high. They just find all kinds of ways to make your product more expensive and unavailable to use. That's kind of the crux of it is how do you prevent, if the company won't do it themselves, what can the country do? Well, they can just stop imports. They can just say, you can't import this product or you can't export that product. That's the only thing the government can do is they can just make laws that will hurt or minimize the impact on their economy.
Is this, and we'll close it out with this, is this like this part of competitive worldwide commerce where countries are being protectionist and also wanting to have stuff manufactured offshore, if you will? Is this a sustainable way of making it work? Are we looking at is this just the way it works and the way it's always going to work?
It's a balancing act. You don't want to stop all cooperation between countries because you need them. We are a single world. In other words, we don't have multiple worlds out there. And so, you know, there has to be some give and take. And so, you know, but it has to be on both sides. In other words, you can't have it all one way. So if our country feels that they're being threatened in some way by a country that holds, as you would, the cards on a particular technology, for example, antibiotics, then the country has to protect itself. Tariffs are basically protectionistic sources or solutions that countries have. All countries have some form of tariffs and duties that products have to pay, depending upon how critical a product is to that country. I heard the term recently about technology nationalism, and I thought that was interesting. I've always thought that your technology should be nationalistic. In other words, that's how you protect the jewels. If you want to make sure that you retain those jewels, is you have to protect your technology in some way. It's like a patent. So, you know, our national protectionism is patenting, you know, preventing other countries from obtaining your technology.
Well, thank you, Ray, for this one. And to our listeners, you can join the conversation at toughthingsfirst.com. Your questions and comments are always welcome. Follow Ray Zinn on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. And of course, get the text of Ray's books, Tough Things First and The Zen of Zinn. Thanks again, Ray.
Thank you, Rob. Appreciate you being here.
You've been listening to Tough Things First, candid talk with Silicon Valley's longest serving CEO, Ray Zinn. Drop by the contact page at toughthingsfirst.com for more about the book, more podcasts, and links to Ray's Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn pages to keep up with Ray Zinn's wisdom daily.